Hi, and welcome to episode number 184 of the weekly Google Cloud Platform podcast. I am Mark, and today I'm here with Mark. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I have a cold, so I'm at home, and my house is falling apart. But outside of that, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
You know, I like your positive attitude, which is awesome.
Yeah, thanks.
But that sounds bad.
It's fine. It's fine. Everything will be fine eventually.
It all works out.
After a while. But we have a great interview today. Gebby and I did an interview with Informatica with Bill Kriegbaum, Senior Director of Product Management for Cloud, Big Data, and Analytic Ecosystems at Informatica. Whew, that is a long title. I hope one day I have a title that long. But we talk all about hybrid cloud with big data and analytics, migrations from on-prem to cloud with big data and analytics, all sorts of good stuff around, essentially, big data and analytics.
Well, that sounds pretty exciting. And I think that if you tried hard enough, you could probably just insert more Google products into your title.
Yeah, I think so.
Master of Agonis and Kubernetes and Dataflow and BigQuery and also consultant on, and you could just keep going.
Then I'd have to learn a lot more products than I currently know. And that sounds hard, and I don't feel like doing that.
Well, in order to test your knowledge there, I have a great question of the week for you, which talks a little bit about App Engine and using custom domains. But before we even get into that, we should talk about our cool things of the week.
We absolutely should. So first of all, let me say a large congratulations to Chronicle. If you're not familiar with Chronicle, they are the security moonshot company inside Google that deal with all kinds of interesting security stuff. You may have heard the episode we did previously, 135, talking about that one of their things, which is VirusTotal, which is actually a free scanner for files for malware and viruses. It can also be used by companies. It's very, very cool. And it's just one of the things they do in the security space. But pretty excited to have them on board with Google Cloud to help enhance the security features we have with Google Cloud and make all the security things better for all our customers.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds awesome. And I think that it's not as though people aren't concerned about security. And, you know, we talk a lot about encryption and all the kind of different infrastructure level security offerings that Google Cloud has by default. But for larger companies, like, you need more, right? You need virus protection, you need malware protection, all those things. So I think that them joining Google Cloud will really open up some real cool opportunities for people who use the cloud. One of the cool things that I was actually just recently reading is that we are opening a new undersea cable to, I think it's right around the west coast of Africa. So it goes all the way from Europe all the way down to the bottom of Africa. And in case you weren't aware, Africa is a very big continent. Oh, yeah. So that's going to be a big cable. I just think it's fascinating. When I joined Google, there were a lot of people making jokes about the undersea cables and the shark proofing, which apparently is a real thing, right? And for anyone who hasn't heard of it, you know, we have these big undersea cables that kind of go around the globe.
It's a real thing.
And a common problem, apparently, with those cables is that sharks like to eat them, which I can't relate to, I have to say.
I believe it actually has something to do with the electronics going through it, and it sets off their sensors, and like they like really like, I don't know exactly, but...
Oh, I should do some research on that. That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
But for the people who are trying to get internet through those wires, it turns out sharks are kind of a pain.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, people chewing through your cables is a bad thing. Anyway, I think it's really awesome, and it just fascinates me that we're just building these huge pipelines to just kind of add additional connectivity for a lot of different areas. So I'm really excited to see this one come online in the next 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And shout out to all our listeners in Africa. Hopefully this works out very well for you. All right, cool. So I think I have something else as well. Oh, yes. I would be remiss if I didn't mention Kubernetes at least once in a podcast. So this was a little bit ago, but I don't think it's been mentioned so far. Kubernetes 1.15. Congratulations to the team on that release. I'm pretty excited about this. This is a lot of extensibility around core Kubernetes APIs, including custom resource definitions and a lot of new features for custom resource definitions, which is an area in which I work in a lot. So very excited about that, as well as cluster lifecycle stability and usability improvements, container storage functionality, and lots of other good things there as well. So if you want to dig more into that, there's actually a really good article that we'll link to as well, talking about the future of custom resource definitions, which they're calling structural schemas. That's a lot of alliteration, where they go into that a lot deeper. And I'm pretty excited about it. It looks like it's going to be really, really handy for those people who write controllers and operators.
You know, there's been a lot of, obviously, a lot of recent news around Kubernetes, and then somewhat related is Istio, of course, which I think just relaunched 2 or 1.12 not recently. I should know that, but I think it's super cool to see all these updates. I'm seeing a lot of stuff on the internet about people being scared about Kubernetes kind of adding too many features into that. So I'm really interested to see how the community is really driving a lot of the kind of upgrades and different things that go into each Kubernetes release.
Yeah, I think, you know, and it's Istio 1.2. I checked that out for you. Well, this could be a whole episode in and of itself. You know, I think there's two things to that. I think there's a lot of stuff that you can just do with Kubernetes, like services and deployments, and that's it. Like, if you just get started with that, you know, you can get running. But I think all the extension mechanisms mean that people can build simpler layers even, or highly opinionated layers going forward as well to make things easier for very specific workloads. So I think there's a two-pronged approach there. But yeah, that could almost be its own episode. That sounds like it might be a good episode, actually.
Yeah, actually, now that you mention it, why don't we do that episode?
We should do that episode.
All right, we'll make a note and do that.
Cool.
But let's finish this one first.
Yes.
I have one more cool thing of the week, which is now that Stackdriver Profiler is now generally available.
Ooh, fancy.
This was a really cool tool that was, I think it was in beta for quite a while, but it actually lets you kind of look at production code that's executing and then kind of see how it's performing as it traces through, like as different functions are being called. And it kind of gives you this cool little visual stack of where your time is being spent. So for a lot of the people who use Stackdriver, and a lot of people who actually, I should say, who are using production code on GCP, Stackdriver has been a really awesome tool because it lets you do live code debugging and fixing in production, which is super impressive. Well, probably not fixing, but actual like observation and seeing like, oh, well, you know, sometimes in dev, you just can't reproduce that problem.
Yeah.
So being able to reproduce it in production and then having a really clear visual graph of like where those slowdowns are and where the problem might be, I think that's super awesome. And so now that it's GA, I think hopefully a lot more people will be more comfortable trying it out.
Yeah, that sounds really great. Fantastic. Well, I tell you what, why don't we get stuck into the interview that Gabby and I did with Bill from Informatica, and we can hear all about big data and analytics and all sorts of other fun things.
Cool. Excited to hear it.
So I'm very happy today to have Bill Kriegbaum here, Senior Director Product Management, Cloud and Big Data Ecosystems from Informatica. Oh my God, that's a lot. Bill, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Before we get stuck into some big data things and talking a little bit about Informatica as well, that is a really big product title. So who are you? What do you do? What's it all about?
So I have the privilege of working with the Cloud Big Data Analytics Ecosystems for Informatica. And a lot of our customers would think, especially in the context of Google, that means we really focus on connectivity to BigQuery and Google Cloud Storage. But we actually have a much broader charter. I'm really focused on making sure that all of our products take the most advantage of the strengths of the Google Cloud platform. You know, so for example, we have a big data management product that allows customers to visually build and manage big data jobs that integrate with all of our governance tools and whatnot. An option that we have through the partnership with Google is we allow the customers to design in Informatica and push the job down to Dataproc. So it actually runs as a push down job there. And we can do similar capabilities with BigQuery. More recently, we have really done a lot of partnership with Google to create value-added solutions for our common customers. And it's far more than just connectivity. Now we're really thinking about, you know, broad use cases, you know, customer 360 type use cases, marketing use cases. It's very exciting.
So you said a lot of words that I'm going to guess relate to big data and stuff, but why don't we just start at a high level? Like, so what does Informatica actually do?
And so, you know, Informatica provides a portfolio of data management products. You know, all of our products are very metadata aware. And, you know, the benefit there is by having a complete solution that focuses on, you know, integration, governance, security, data quality, and discoverability, you know, you have that completely integrated solution that allows you to, you know, move quickly, move safely, deal with, you know, strict regulations with confidence, and at the same time, deliver business value, right? I mean, everyone talks about the democratization of data. This is how you do it. You know, if you're missing any one of those pieces, then you're starting to worry. You open yourselves up to risk, and then that's when you start to hold the data back. And so I think with our platform, you know, we really allow business users to get a hold of the data.
Awesome. So what's like a really great example of someone using Informatica and Google Cloud together that people might like? What would be a canonical example of that?
There's a couple of really good examples. Yeah, I think a lot of what I've been really excited to see recently is, you know, customers that, you know, try to build like a customer 360 type, you know, analytical solutions. And, you know, they started on-prem, they started using Hadoop, and that was really a lot of the promise of, you know, the beginning of the big data movement, but the operational costs are just so extreme. But now they're working with, you know, Google and BigQuery in particular, and they're just seen so much tremendous opportunity to move those very expensive workloads on-prem into the cloud. They're saving a ton of money, but more importantly, they're seeing new opportunities. The technology is opening doors to new use cases. And I think that's my favorite part is like customers begin the journey as like, oh, it's going to be cheaper for me to run it in the cloud. And then they pause and they go like, wait, you mean I can do it completely different and faster and still do it cheaper? That's when you start to see the creativity of our customers and our industry at large really take flight.
So Informatica, Dan, it's more like, from what I got it, you were able to facilitate ETL processing for customers. Let's say you let them build their own pipelines, apparently. And beyond that, how do customers approach you? You said that some already have an old setup already from the beginning of big data, but how usually like a new company comes to you that has no big data at all, they want to start doing it. How does the approach happen?
Well, you know, it definitely depends on where that particular customer is in their, let's call it the modernization journey, right? But what we've been really excited to see is that when our customers use, you know, our complete portfolio, not just our integration products, but the complete portfolio, especially with, you know, our metadata-driven catalog capabilities, because they start much more from a use case perspective. They start from a business object perspective, you know, because, you know, first of all, you know, you got to find the right data, right? You might have like a sales operation use case, right? And you're working with sales ops. You want to modernize, you know, let's say a marketing lead campaign initiative, right? Well, to start, I got to go find good marketing lead data. And so if I have a catalog that has, you know, scanned my enterprise, I could type in, you know, the Google for the enterprise, right? You know, show me all of my marketing lead data. And you might get back 20, 30, maybe 50 different data assets. At that point, okay, I'm overwhelmed as a business user. So do I just pick the one at the top? Do I randomly pick? How do I choose? And what's really beneficial is that when you have that data catalog capability with a higher order value, right? Use machine learning to identify business objects, you know, locate PII, you can start to make some really intelligent decisions. And, you know, because now I can determine, this says marketing lead, does it have all the elements that's required for a complete marketing lead object? So that's kind of like step one. And then step two is, do I know where that data came from? And do I know if it's being used downstream by a different application? So for example, if I see a marketing lead object and I see that that object is being populated by, you know, Marketo and Salesforce sources, right? Those are pretty reliable industry sources. And I see it being consumed by 10 downstream applications that says, wow, this is actually being used by the business. I can safely assume that this object is valuable and trusted. Whereas if I compare it with another object that has no downstream consumption, I can make some, you know, informed decisions on which data to begin using. So the point is by combining data discovery with data integration, you can make, you know, much better decisions about what data to integrate and then go straight into the provisioning process to BigQuery.
I usually see people saying and agree that your business value relies on the quality of data that you have. It doesn't matter how much money you're bringing. If you're not curating your data properly, you're going to have some troubles, especially if you want to modernize, do data analytics, do machine learning. You need to rely on your source. And do you encounter a lot of people having problems with like data that's not normalized, data that's not like duplicated records, let's say, you know, do you have that many issues and how do you help those customers solve this kind of issues too or not?
Absolutely. I've been in the analytics space for the better part of the past decade. And I've seen so many analytics initiatives fail after such great intentions because of bad quality data. It has nothing to do with the analytics itself. It has to do with bad raw material, right? And the quality of data comes from a couple of different scenarios. Number one is like, is it safe for me to access, right? If I can't safely access the data, there's no point, right? At that point, quality doesn't matter. So, you know, having a solution that, you know, masks data or adheres to role-based access controls, you know, number one, I mean, that allows a business user to safely use the data, right? And we all talk about enabling the citizen X, right? Citizen integrator, citizen application developer, citizen analyst. We want those business users to safely acquire the data. Okay. So once your platform has allowed them to safely acquire the data, what is the quality, right? And quality is completeness of data, right? You know, if I've got a data set that's got a bunch of null values, that's going to have limited utility for me, right? And being able to really profile your data set gives me an understanding of the quality of data. But beyond that, you know, now we get into kind of like a higher order of data quality. And so let's continue our marketing lead example. You know, if I've, you know, got a table with some really good marketing lead object definitions, and part of that is email addresses, phone numbers, and zip codes, yet 60% of my email addresses are malformed and my zip codes only have 3 digits. Yeah, the structure might look fantastic, but the actual data is going to be useless for me, right? And you don't want to throw it away. You know, do you have the ability to recover from it and, you know, get quality data? And if not, you know, can we safely exclude the data? So it's absolutely essential, because at the end of the day, analytics comes down to, do you trust the output? And the higher the quality input, the better trust you have, you know, with a particular analytic.
Given that we are the Google Cloud Platform podcast, this all sounds really great, but like in application, like what tools and products are we using here on Google Cloud to help facilitate this sort of pipeline?
Our customers use a combination of both of our company's products, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, from Informatica side, they're using our intelligent cloud services. They're using our enterprise data catalog, big data management, and sometimes secure at source, which is one of our governance tools. And then on the Google Cloud Platform side, you know, Google BigQuery. I mean, I'm telling you guys, I am seeing so much traffic flow through to BigQuery, and the adoption is fantastic. And I'm seeing, you know, like huge curves up and to the right in adoption and usage. But to really complement BigQuery, there's a lot of usage of Google Cloud Storage. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, you know, behind the covers, we use a lot of them in tandem to really drive performance of bulk loading. We also see a lot of interoperation with Google Analytics. And we're starting to see a much bigger uptake of technologies like PubSub as part of these workflows. And I already talked about Dataproc earlier. So one of the things that I think about a great deal and that my entire team thinks about is, how can we best provide our customers with the strengths of BigQuery and the entire Google Cloud Platform surfaced through the Informatica products, right? Because I want to give them easy access to it. That's what Informatica brings to the table, right? We bring, you know, the easy access, visual design environments, governance, lineage, metadata management, et cetera. But I don't want to provide coverage that's just like vanilla access. I want our customers to take the most advantage of why they picked Google Cloud in the first place.
Nice. Do you have customers that are like, hey, I've already got a Google Cloud project and I've got a bunch of stuff in Google Cloud Storage, and they come to you and they're like, we're already doing stuff, how do we integrate? Or do you find it's coming from the other way, where in like you've got customers from Informatica and they're like, oh, actually, no, we want to push this down into Google Cloud in some way, shape, or form?
I got to tell you, Mark, sometimes I feel like it's coming from top, bottom, left, and right, in all different combinations. But in all seriousness, I mean, we really focus on the hybrid enterprise, right? And there's just crazy momentum to the cloud, right? I mean, heck, I've been talking about it ever since the cloud was born, right? But it is just happening with just fierce velocity. But no matter that velocity, large enterprises are still going to have a presence on-prem. And we have to treat that hybrid nature of, you know, on-prem, cloud, multi-cloud as first-class citizens, right? We all do. You know, so a lot of times, you know, our customers will, you know, I hate to speak in generalities, but, you know, from anecdotal, you know, engagements and evidence, a lot of our customers will start with, I need to modernize my legacy warehouse and I want to get into BigQuery. Great cost, performance, benefits, great technology. And they start off with really just more of a cost savings, right? They want to get rid of their physical infrastructure and shift the operational load to Google. But the reality is that halfway through that journey, that light, that epiphany happens. And they start to see much more of the value add of what can be done. You know, for example, I was engaging with a large customer, a joint customer earlier in the year, and their initial goal was just to modernize their warehouse with BigQuery. And we started down that path and it was going really well. And actually, during a joint engagement where I was actually co-presenting with somebody from Google to this particular customer, the light went on and they're going like, wait, can I replace my Hadoop environment on-prem with BigQuery and actually unify all my data? You should see the grins. It was like this collective room of lights going on about what was possible, the art of the possible. You know, so back to your point, Mark, I mean, to, you know, coming from like, you know, from existing scenarios or new scenarios, a lot of times it will come with a new initiative, but then all of a sudden it'll kind of blossom into multiple initiatives happening at once.
So I'm glad you brought up on-prem because I wanted to ask you about like that data migration story. How are you seeing customers taking their data and bringing it from, say, an on-prem environment and bringing it into the cloud? I mean, that seems like a big job in and of itself.
You know, it is a big job in and of itself. And, you know, there are, you know, technical nuances that need to be considered, right? You know, the one that I run into most often are like the differences in data types, right? But, you know, what I see a lot of customers start with is just like, again, they see dollar signs and the opportunity for immediate cost savings. And that's absolutely correct. I mean, there can be a tremendous and fast ROI by moving from a legacy warehouse into BigQuery. And what that means is that, you know, customers are oftentimes starting with just like a lift and shift. I just want to take what's there, move it into BigQuery and be done, right? And it's true. A customer can realize some quick savings that way, but so much is lost. And if you're going to go through this effort, and let's be honest, this is an effort. No matter how much awesome tooling both of our companies bring to the table, it's still an effort. Customers that don't take this, you know, inflection point to think about the future, I think are missing a great deal of opportunity, right? I mean, I think the obvious example is, you know, classic warehouse models are, you know, heavily normalized, right? Which made a lot of sense for, you know, the classic warehouse, right? Based on old technologies, old storage, old compute, and whatnot. But we all know that when you move to BigQuery, it's like, no. Let's seriously normalize this and really take advantage of the power. But it's such a complete shift for, you know, DBAs and people that have been doing this for 25, 30 years, right? And, you know, for those that just simply do a lift and shift for that immediate cost savings, I think they're really missing a great opportunity. And so a lot of times we'll start off with a lift and shift to get immediate success, but then it immediately moves into an evolution once you're in BigQuery to start taking advantage of the data structures and the technologies that are there. So it's not an either or, but it's a closely synchronous and, if you will. You know, we go lift and shift immediately into evolution. And that's where I think we see a lot of benefits gained.
I remember when I started working with a bit of big data, I'm not that versed, let's say, but the fact of being able to use BigQuery, like just put my data there and they figure out indexes, they figure out how many servers it's going to take to spin up a query, that probably makes your product more versatile, taking advantage of this kind of technology. You said like this mind shift for old school DBAs, some has growing pains. Does that happen to you too?
it certainly does, you know, and I think, you know, especially customers that have been working with Informatica for, you know, 20, 25 years, there's a familiarity with the, you know, common patterns, right? Yeah, but sometimes those common patterns don't translate well into the cloud. And so there's a learning curve. And I think one of the things that Informatica is able to bring to the table is that we help flatten that learning curve. We can help take advantage of the, you know, unique capabilities of the cloud faster because, you know, from our customer's perspective, they're still working with this familiar tool set. And yes, the technology behind that we're connecting to differs, but we're able to kind of abstract it. So we're able to get some really fast adoption. But once you get that fast adoption, remember, you know, a few moments ago, I was talking about, we also want to make sure that the customers can truly take advantage of the characteristics of Google Cloud Platform and BigQuery. So for example, we talked about ETL earlier, but let's talk about ELT, you know, extract, load, transform. We want to seriously take advantage of that kind of capability in BigQuery. So using our, you know, intelligent cloud services to actually load data into BigQuery and then process the transformation inside BigQuery, we're able to actually push down the entire job into BigQuery so that we're using the BigQuery engine to do all the transformations. And that's got a couple of benefits. Number one, you just talked about it. You know, it's a serverless scale out environment with tremendous compute power that you're able to spin up on demand. That means Informatica is able to take advantage of that. And so we're able to deliver, you know, a crazy amount of performance with ease. And our common customers are benefiting greatly from that.
Fantastic. I'm kind of curious as well, too. Obviously, you've worked with a variety of people who do these sort of big data and analytics platforms. If you could like tell anyone who works in like big data analytics, like one thing that they should all be doing or like one mistake they should potentially not make, that's broadly generalized. Like what would you suggest is like maybe like the best practice you would love to get out into the world?
Oh, Mark, that's such a loaded question.
That's why I asked it.
Can't I have like 10, not one?
Yeah, we can go with a couple. Right. We got some time.
Yeah, I think you got to probably boil it down into three very distinct recommendations. Number one is you got to take stock of what you've got. I think companies are completely surprised by the amount of data assets that they have in every nook and cranny of their enterprise. And, you know, you really want to take a good inventory of what you have, determine what's important, and prioritize and categorize. That's kind of step one. But maybe most importantly is you need to set goals. And I know that sounds basic and it sounds obvious, but more often than not, I'm not seeing clear goal set. So A, we have no idea when we ever finish because we don't know where we're headed. And when we do get there, was it successful? Was it not? We don't know. And by setting goals, you set focus. You set kind of like your guiding star that everyone aligns and marches towards, which then leads me to the third one. And that is you got to develop a team. And again, seems obvious, but maybe not in the way that you're thinking. I would recommend companies to form like a migration, you know, SWAT team. And this is the team that is well-versed both in the technology and the business goals, because they need to be the leaders, right? Because they're going to need to get people to follow them on this journey into the cloud. And for many people, especially those that are comfortable with the familiarity of doing it the old way, they're going to ask why. And you want this team to be able to not only execute, but to also inspire the confidence in moving to the cloud. And so when you kind of combine that with, you know, clear goals and a really good understanding of what you have in place today, I just think it sets an enterprise up for success.
Talking about innovations and easy to use technologies is good, but also brings up great powers, great responsibilities, right? So how does GDPR and those kind of regulations ensure they're working with Informatica? Because one thing is to be GDPR ready and another thing to be GDPR compliant.
Absolutely.
You know? So how do you deal with that?
Well, and again, I mean, it's, you know, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but, you know, because we deliver a platform that integrates, you know, integration, governance, security, metadata management, discovery as part of the whole platform, it's a little bit easier for us to deliver on the realization of being GDPR compliant, not just ready. You know, for example, you know, the right to be forgotten. It's a difficult problem, right? I mean, if you think like a global enterprise with many subsidiaries, you probably have PII sitting all over the globe, right? Managed by many different business units. But the right to be forgotten doesn't care about such silos. It's like, if I want to be forgotten, that's it. You need to forget me. And so, you know, we have a product called Secure at Source that allows a compliance officer to kind of log in and actually says, you know, show me all the locations within my enterprise where PII exists. And then from there, again, it's like, okay, I have a roadmap of where I need to go so that when somebody chooses to be forgotten, I'm not guessing or hoping, I'm able to know, right? And it's definitely one of the benefits of having that, you know, unified platform that's, you know, integrated as a complete solution, because it enables that. And, you know, things like GDPR and CCPA, I mean, they codify much of what we've talked about, right? We've talked about security and governance, you know, since we began our conversation a short while ago. And, you know, this kind of like codifies the requirements. But I think in some sense, every enterprise worries about this regardless of the regulation.
Speaking of things like personally identifiable information and other potential high-risk sort of information storage, do you have best practices or things that people should be aware of when looking at that kind of data that could potentially be high-risk?
Absolutely. So, I mean, we started off talking about modernizing your, you know, data infrastructure to BigQuery. So let's look at it from a construct of, you know, that journey, right? And, you know, we talked about, you know, setting goals and building a team to be successful. Well, part of being successful also is quick wins, right? You know, you want to build momentum based off of success. So, you know, one of the things that I've seen successful companies do is when they start their migrations into the cloud, let's not start off with the tables full of PII, because that radically complicates the scenario, because now you got to get your IT people involved, you got to get your security people involved, your governance people involved. So sometimes it's best to know where your PII data is not, right? And so by using, you know, your data catalog, by using Informatica's enterprise data catalog, you can see, right, and not guess. It's like, okay, this table's got a bunch of PII. It's a lot of value here, but you know what? Let's do that maybe in phase two or phase three. Let's come and take a look at these other data objects that has a lot of business value below PII. And that's going to allow me to migrate to BigQuery rapidly, get success, build a new use case, And now I can repeat and build on that success and gain that momentum. Probably like almost like the opposite answer of what you were expecting, but sometimes knowing where your PII is not is very beneficial.
Awesome. All right, cool. So we're coming up on time here, unfortunately. But before we go, Bill, is there anything that we've missed or you want to mention or make sure that you get out there so people can hear it?
You know, Mark, so number one, thanks to you and Gabby. I've had a great time chatting with you both. Yeah, I would say that to our customers listening today, you know, check out the partnership between our companies. It's fantastic. I truly enjoy working with the team at Google, and together we're doing some great solutions for our customers. And it's fun to be in market with you guys. So thank you.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being a wonderful partner. Well, Bill, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Huge thanks to Bill for joining Gabby and I this week. Super interesting episode. Really, I don't do a lot with big data analytics, so it was super handy for me to learn more about that area and some of the migration patterns that people have.
Plus, I feel like if you do some more in that area, then you can add that to your title.
Sure. Yeah. Then I can have a long title like Bill.
Well, more relevant to, I think, everyone who's listening than your title, I think we have our question of the week.
Yes, yes, we do. Go ahead, ask it. I'm ready.
So when you create an App Engine app, you get a domain that comes with it.
Yep.
Usually a pretty generic domain based on the project name and then, you know, App Engine. But of course, you can use your own custom domains.
Yep.
And I think a lot of people, you know, they want to do that because custom domains are nice.
Yep.
But when you're using a custom domain, sometimes a lot of times you need to use subdomains.
Yep.
How the heck do you use subdomains with a custom domain in App Engine?
Whew, that's a good question. So there's actually a lot of really cool ways you can configure subdomains with App Engine in both static and dynamic ways, which is super nice. So for a static point of view, you can set up a dispatch.yaml. It's a configuration file wherein you can configure actually a variety of stuff, not only just subdomains, but also paths and some other things to particular services. So services are individual deployments inside App Engine. Like if you had different API endpoints, you might want to do different services. Then you can have versions within those services as well. So you can set that up within your dispatch YAML to say like, oh, I want, you know, dog.foo.bar. I want that.com to go to my default service, but, you know, cat.foo.bar, I want to go to my cat service. And that's pretty straightforward. It's just some YAML file and it's pretty easy to set up. That being said, if you want to get dynamic with it, which some people do, and we use it for some things, and it might be a bit easier. You can set that up with wildcards as well. So you can do that to the lower level down in your dispatch YAML. But if you just want to do it simply, you don't even need a dispatch YAML. You can set up your custom domain with basically a wildcard. So you might be like star.foo.com, and you can set that up in your custom domain configuration and potentially also have a wildcard for your SSL if you have an SSL, which you probably should. And what's nice there is what will happen there is if a person goes to a subdomain, right? It's a wildcard, could be any subdomain. App Engine will actually look for a version or a service that matches the same name as that subdomain. If you go to dog.foo.com, it'll go look for a service named dog, and it will then serve that. So that can be a really handy way of if you have subdomains that come up on a regular basis, maybe you have snapshots of documentation that you want to have version, something like that, that come up every regular period. You can set up something dynamic like that so that all you have to do is create a new either version or service that matches the subdomain that you have, and then that'll get served. And if App Engine can't find that subdomain, it'll just send it back to default, which is fine too. So you can do some really nice dynamic stuff that way too. So you have lots of options.
So if you have the wildcard, you obviously get all the subdomains you want. And then from there, you can either statically configure them, saying which ones you want, or you can do it dynamically and then pull up different versions, which I think you made a great use case for when you said, hey, you know, you might have different versions that are in the past and you want to still have references to those.
Yeah.
So you kind of have two great ways to continue hosting content, all from a single App Engine project.
Yeah. And it's kind of like that whole thing, right? It's convention for configuration, you know, one way with the wildcards, or you can have static configuration using your dispatch YAML.
Awesome. Well, I think that should help a lot of people who are looking to kind of make more complex App Engine deployments.
Awesome. Well, before we wrap up, Mark, are you going anywhere, doing any cool content? What are you working on? Anything you can talk about? Or is it all super secret?
I'm always nervous about talking about content before it goes live because, like, what if the dates change or anything like that?
So it's super secret?
It's nothing secret, but, you know, they involve customers and different people working with the cloud. Yep. So I'm like, oh, hey, we got, you know, ex-President Obama on here to talk about cloud. And of course I didn't, but that would be
really
cool.
That would be really cool. So anything you recently released that you can talk about?
Yeah, I mean, I think we released two episodes earlier this month on Stack Chat, which I think we mentioned once or twice before, which is kind of our customer interview series that I'm working on. And one of them talks a lot about Anthos. And I think that's really timely just because there's been a lot of buzz around Anthos.
Absolutely.
And a little bit of confusion about, like, you know, hey, what actually is it and how does it work? And I think this helps talk a little bit about how this company, Arctic, found the use case for it and then used Anthos to solve it. And I think we're seeing a lot of cool media on Anthos. There's actually a really fun video that Sandeep just put out, which is a rewind of a presentation at Next called Meet Anthos. And these rewinds are fun because they only take about 4 or 5 minutes to watch, and they kind of summarize that talk. So I definitely recommend checking out the Anthos episode, the interview with Arctic of Stack Chat, as well as Sandeep's Meet Anthos. I guess it's not really related to me traveling, though. So long story short, no, I'm not traveling because we're making videos.
No, that's fine. That's all good.
What about yourself?
I will be at Tokyo Next presenting, which I'm pretty excited about. Always love going to Japan. And then the day before the North American Open Source Summit, there's an Open Source and Gaming Day where I will be presenting a couple of things. I think actually I'm doing a keynote, which will be fun. So I'll be doing that. And I'll also be hanging around the North American Open Source Summit. So I'll be hanging out there. So if you're around, come say hi.
Very, very cool. It sounds like you're going to be in a lot of places.
I get around a bit.
I feel like for all the traveling you do, I don't do, which is good because then the Mark equilibrium would be upset if we both traveled or if we both didn't travel.
Yeah.
Right. Some kind of paradox.
Yeah. You can't have us both at the same place at the same time.
Well, I think that'll about do it for this episode.
Wonderful. I think so. So Mark, thank you so much for joining me on this week's podcast.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all next week.
Bye.